This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, as we enter the second year of Vladimir Putin's special military operation in Ukraine, in other words, his war and invasion, which he has prosecuted brutally and continues to prosecute brutally, the conversation around the Ukraine-Russia conflict is basically one-dimensional and perhaps was articulated best by Joe Biden and his trip to Europe last week, including to Kiev. And it is, we must win. Putin must be beaten. He cannot be allowed to get away with the things that he has done. The European position on this is difficult to encapsulate or even discern. And one, as always, one of the most interesting views or perspectives is the French perspective, and we're joined now by Lara Marlow, the Irish Times Paris correspondent, who has been writing some really amazing pieces about Macron's position, the French position, the history of it. Lara, you're very welcome to The Stand, and thank you very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Eamon. Thank you.
The French don't have the same simple take on Putin. For example, Macron alone, as far as I can see, among Western leaders, does not believe that Putin has to go. Is he conscious of the degree to which opinion in France, right and left, from Le Pen to Mélenchon, is not simple, understands Putin's point of view? Is he conscious of that? And is he even conscious, perhaps, of the Treaty of Versailles, when Germany was humiliated, which produced Adolf Hitler and the Nazis? In other words, we must give Putin... Am I fair to say that President Macron thinks Putin must be given enough hope and belief to continue?
Yes, to all of the above questions. I mean, as far as the French political class having a weak spot for Russia, you could say that Macron himself did. I mean, he's sort of gone zigzagged on the whole Russian question since 2017, since he became president. But I remember him welcoming Putin to his summer residence at Brégançon in 2019. And he said that the two of them together should create a new security architecture for our Europe. And this very much upset a lot of people in, well, the Germans were kind of shocked because they weren't really consulted on it. Although Merkel and Macron did suggest a dialogue with Russia. I mean, the Germans, of course, were so reliant on Russian hydrocarbons. But Macron, I think, is very representative in a way of the French political class because they see Russia as being on the same landmass. He always says, yes, Russia is not going to move. It's part of Europe. He very often says that. And he has said about a little over a year ago, he said, one mustn't humiliate Russia. And that outraged the Ukrainians. And I remember having lunch with a former French ambassador who said, well, Jacques Chirac said the same thing. He used to always say one mustn't humiliate Russia. But having, you know, having said that after the invasion of Ukraine did not go down well. And then in December, he said more or less the same thing. He said Russia would need security guarantees. So I think he, in part of it, he may be wanting to position himself as the peacemaker, as the negotiator, if and when this whole horrible business comes to an end. But perhaps he's also being more realistic. I mean, he said at the Munich Security Conference on February 17th, he was talking, he said, I do not believe for one second in regime change in Russia. And he's the only person who said that.
He continued that sentence by saying, I hear a lot of people calling for regime change, and I ask them, who would take over? Who is the leader?
Yeah.
And he pointed out that the West has seen regime change in numerous countries, and it's always led to failure. That's his a quote from him. And he points out, in the past two decades, Western interventions in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya have ended disastrously, and that's something one can't argue against.
No, he has a very good point. And I personally, I did a lot of reporting from Ukraine last year, and I feel very strongly that the Ukraine is the victim and Russia is the aggressor. But the more I think about Macron's position, the more it seems to make sense. You know, we can't just click our fingers and say, you know, Putin gone. He may not disappear, and we may have to deal with him. So, which is exactly what Macron is saying.
Yes, the problem with that, Lara, are the crimes that Putin has committed in Ukraine.
Yes, yes.
And the other problem, I think, is that he could be fairly described as a fascist. Really well.
Yes,
some kind of fascist. I mean, that they come in all shapes and sizes. And the International Criminal Court, for example, has been cited by the Americans and many Europeans as a place where they would like to see some of these monsters that have been unleashed on Ukraine by Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, and I can certainly see that argument. I would like to see Vladimir Putin in the dock. I think he deserves to be tried as a war criminal. But you could also argue that George W. Bush and Donald Rumsfeld and those people deserve to be tried for what they did to Iraq. They totally destroyed that country. And unfortunately, in this whole situation, the U.S. has really undermined its position by its past actions.
Harry Truman might be in that dock as well for Hiroshima. And there are the most appalling things that the Americans did in Vietnam, and nobody has clean hands, although we like to pretend that we do. The British in Dresden, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is without end. But that said, maybe, you know, arresting Putin. I mean, they did get Milosevic, and he died in prison in The Hague. So it's not inconceivable, but it's also not inconceivable that Putin will stay in power. And we're all, you know, flying blind at the moment. And actually, that was one of the points that Gratchev made. He said no one is in control, and we're all skating on very thin ice.
Yeah, let's talk about Gratchev. Andrei Gratchev was Mikhail Gorbachev's advisor. He has written books about this, and including the current conflict. And you attended a lunch in Paris, where Gratchev was the guest, and he wasn't. Tell us what his position is, and tell us about his fears, because he does have some.
Oh, he certainly does. He says he's very, very pessimistic. I mean, just to tell you a little bit about the mood, the lunch was in the cellar of a restaurant, and when he arrived, he looked around. He's a very dignified guy. I don't know if you've ever come across him. He's a historian, and he speaks very well. He looked around him, and he said, "This would be a good nuclear bunker."
Yes.
And that was kind of the mood. He said that the best scenario that he could imagine is what he called the Korean scenario. And this is not totally original. One hears it fairly often, but he said at the end of the Korean War, there was an armistice, but the borders were never defined and they were never recognized. And he said that's the best possible outcome. And he doesn't even think that that's likely to happen now. He talked a lot about the possibility of nuclear war. He said, for example, that in NATO doctrine, nuclear weapons were to have been used to stop a Soviet advance towards Germany.
Yes.
But that has kind of been reversed now. And the logic is Putin is saying that he will use Russian nuclear weapons if Russian territory is going to be taken away from him, away from Russia. The problem is that he claims that four oblasts, four regions in Ukraine are Russian territory, Crimea, and the whole southwest of Ukraine. So would he, if he was losing that territory, would he then use nuclear weapons? And that certainly is what he has very strongly implied in the past.
NATO made a commitment after the collapse of the Soviet Union that it wouldn't move eastwards. Let's put it no stronger than that. And it has.
Yes.
And well, this is
interesting. Yeah. I mean, I actually covered, I was at the Élysée on the day in 1997, I think it was May, if my memory is correct, when Boris Yeltsin, it was Jacques Chirac, Tony Blair was there, all the Western leaders were there, basically, and they signed a founding act between NATO and the Russian Federation. And at the time, I mean, it was quite euphoric. It was a moving ceremony. I remember because I grew up in the U.S. I was 5 years old when the Cuban Missile Crisis happened, and my mother was a nervous wreck. And I really grew up under the shadow of nuclear war. And it was very moving. We were told, you know, there will never be another threat of nuclear war and so on. So much for that. At the time, there was Yeltsin wanted a guarantee that NATO would not move into the former East Bloc countries.
Yes.
And there was a sort of a verbal agreement. It was kind of understood by everybody. But now the apologists for NATO and for the West are saying, well, it was never on paper. So, you know, even that is disputed. I mean, I think they did trick Russia in a sense. I think Russia did certainly wanted a commitment that NATO would not expand to the east. This is Putin's justification. He says this is an existential issue for Russia. The EU and NATO are just moving closer and closer and closer. And he actually said on Sunday that soon there will be no ethnic Russians left. I mean, now he's accusing the West of genocide, which is a bit rich, you have to admit. But he feels threatened is possible. Does it justify what he's doing in Ukraine? Absolutely not.
Now, when you attended that lunch with Grachev, he has a new book. The title of it, it's a book of essays. The title is "The World Will Never Be the Same Again."
Mm-hmm.
It's a collective work. It's just been published in Paris. And I think many of us believe when you take Putin's aggression and you add it to China's newfound aggression, Taiwan being the most obvious and next target after they have taken Hong Kong, it does appear that the world may never be the same again, Lara, and that the big geopolitical conflict here is between the authoritarian world, which includes Iran, places in the Middle East, China, Russia, and the free world, as we like to call it, the Western world, that is now in play.
Oh, absolutely. And Putin has a... very disconcerting amount of support in the developing world in Africa and South America. People who reject the Western model because they say we're hypocrites and that there's not justice and equality and so on, and that Western style democracy wouldn't help them or doesn't work in their countries. So yes, this authoritarian model, Turkey. Look at Erdogan's Turkey, and Turkey's in NATO for heaven's sakes.
Yes,
it is in very many ways a war between two systems. And I think if Putin were to win in Ukraine, it would obviously be very threatening to democracy. I think Grantchev said something interesting. He said that he doesn't think that Putin really believes that NATO is going to attack or invade Russia militarily. But what worries Putin is the example. It's the democratic model. It's the idea that the West could impose free and fair elections and their model everywhere, including in Russia. And that's what really worries him. I think there's something to that.
And also the Chinese would take the same view of Taiwan. Mm-hmm. If you have freedom and prosperity and elections in a place that works next door, that is the threat, isn't it? How would Macron, for example, explain that? If you put it to him, Putin cannot remain because he has embarked on a course which will inevitably lead, perhaps, to a nuclear war.
Well, I can't speak for Emmanuel Macron, but I think he would say that it's not up to France or the West to decide how Russia should be governed. I think that he would say that's a matter for the Russian people. And it's far from certain, touch wood, that Putin's course will lead us all to nuclear war. It's possible. I actually have friends in Paris who are buying iodine tablets. You know, all we can do is hope that it's not going to happen. I don't think anybody, including Putin, I don't think he really wants a nuclear war, but he has said, and his entourage have said repeatedly, that if he's got his back against the wall, he will use them as an ultimate recourse. And that is a very frightening prospect.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Now, the United States have galvanized NATO. They have led in this campaign. They have put more money, more arms than anyone else. The British have also, despite the wretchedness of Boris Johnson, he was the first Western leader to supply weapons, defensive weapons, admittedly. The analysis, as it were, of Macron, will it separate him from other European leaders, say Scholz in Germany, or indeed the British, or indeed the Americans? If they try to prosecute the war under their belief, which is basically Putin must go, must not be allowed to win.
We could be heading for difficulties in that, but on the other hand, it may, you know, it's impossible to predict. The war has already created difficulties between France and Germany because they're a very, very close relationship. The engine of Europe, to use the old cliche, is always fraught with difficulties. And the French are just profoundly different countries, and their leaders are very different. And I don't think that Macron and Scholz actually have very much in common. But they've had rows about weapon systems. For example, the Germans last October announced an anti-air defense system that they were doing with the US. I think the UK is in it. Certainly Israel is in it. And it's basically, and a lot of NATO countries, I think Norway. And the French were absolutely furious because it wasn't done. They weren't told about it in advance. And, you know, Scholz just sprung it on them. Anyway, but going back to the long-term effects of this, you said the U.S. has galvanized NATO. Absolutely. But I think it's fear of the Russians that has galvanized NATO. And it should be pointed out that the war has also rehabilitated the U.S. because remember after the shameful, the debacle in Kabul, last August, after the U.S. basically abandoned Afghanistan after, you know, all those years and all that blood and treasure, the U.S. prestige was very, very low. And indeed, Grachev suggests that's one reason, one thing that emboldened Putin to invade Ukraine was that he thought, he called him Sleepy Joe, you know, was just not up to it.
Yes.
But the U.S. is totally rehabilitated. They're a leader again. And now all of Europe, including up to a point France, although they're always the most reticent on this, sees U.S. security guarantees as absolutely necessary for Europe. So that is a good thing for the U.S. In terms of the U.S. giving more weapons and aid than anyone else, that is true. But if you put all of the EU countries together and add up what they're giving, it's more or less almost as much as the U.S. Okay, granted, the population is more than twice as much as the U.S. population, but if you see them as two sort of comparable blocks or something, the EU is not doing too badly, basically.
No. And the question is Macron, and you, in a piece you wrote for the Irish Times, you pointed out that he has been criticized in France because he wants a Ukrainian victory on condition that it doesn't mean a Russian defeat.
Yes.
The sort of pirouette at which he excels, you quote the philosopher Pascal Bruckner writing in Le Figaro. And it does, I must say, it does strike me as some pirouette.
Yes. Well, it's, you know, Macron's slogan has always been en même temps, at the same time.
Yes.
So he wants to talk to Russia and he wants to give weapons to Zelensky. And he wants, I mean, the real killer line that Pascal Bruckner used, which I thought was really brilliant. He said that this is untenable. He said, you cannot be Churchill and Chamberlain at the same time.
Yes.
And Macron's entourage hates that quote, of course. I used it when talking to people who support him, and they just say, I wouldn't put it in those terms and this sort of thing. But one does have the impression that he kind of is on both sides of the question at the same time. But actually, Grachev said, I asked Grachev what he thought of Macron's position, and I expected him to be critical because he himself is very, very critical of Putin. And he said, no, I think Macron is right. He said at some point, you know, when heads are cooler, when people are more rational, he can play a useful role. And I think that, Putin, because Macron has, been, well, you know, willing to talk to him after everyone else did not want to, and because he said these things about not humiliating Russia and giving Russia security guarantees, he would be well positioned to be a negotiator. But then so would Recep Erdogan in Turkey. So, you know, he's not the only one, but I think he would really like that role.
But as this conflict in Ukraine has unfolded, Lara, with the terrible atrocities, including rape, destruction, attacks on hospitals, schools, the kind of things we saw in Syria, the Russians doing there with their general Armageddon. Most people in the West think there's no way back for Putin. For Putin's Russia, there's no way back.
And there may not be. There may not be. But it's hard to, we don't know what is the scenario. Does someone from his close entourage, you know, a servant in the Kremlin or somebody just shoot him in the head? Is there a putsch by Russian generals?
Yes.
There are apparently people even more extreme than Putin.
Prigozhin,
the head of the Wagner militia or mercenary group, whatever you want to call it, he seems to me to be as bad or worse than Putin. There's some really kind of lunatic, far-right religious fanatics, Orthodox Christians, you know, who believe that this is Russia's destiny to recreate the empire of the czars and this sort of thing. So, you know, we think there couldn't be anyone worse than Putin, but maybe there could be.
I mean, in
Iraq, just within a year or two of Saddam Hussein being overthrown by the Americans, I heard many, many, many Iraqis saying we were better off under Saddam. And I think that Macron is right in being cautious, because what would happen if Putin is overthrown, say, murdered or taken to the Hague for a war crimes trial, and Russia descends into utter chaos and anarchy or starts attacking other countries again? You know, are we really going to be any better off that way?
Let me ask you a final question, Lara, about the degree to which, if at all, domestic politics, Le Pen on his right, Mélenchon on the left, both of whom have nuanced positions, shall we say, on Russia, the degree to which that plays a part in forming Macron's thinking, if any?
I don't think it does. Actually, interestingly enough, Le Pen and Mélenchon and Zemmour, all these people who adored Putin before, have been silent. And like Maloney in Italy, for example, or they will say they support the Ukrainian people. And Marine Le Pen's line is, well, we want negotiations with Russia, which many view as a sort of pacifist, pro-Russian kind of, you know, a cop-out. But anyway, nobody's saying, you know, down with Zelensky or down with Ukraine. And the vast majority of the French really do support the Ukrainians. I don't think it's so much Macron playing to the political opposition, because he's notoriously, he has great disregard and contempt for them, frankly. And I don't, for example, on the pension debate, which is a whole other issue, he has not in any way changed his position to placate the far left and the far right. I mean, and I don't think he is in the Ukraine war. I think this is genuinely his own thought out position. You know, he is in a bit of an awkward place, because almost up to the eve of the invasion of Ukraine, Macron and the French were saying it wouldn't happen.
Yes.
And when the Americans and the British kept warning, he's going to do it, he's going to do it, he's going to invade Ukraine, the French were saying, ah, this is really irresponsible, they're going to make a self-fulfilling prophecy, and they were really criticizing what they call les Anglo-Saxons. And I think that's always kind of in the background. Macron is and Scholz, the Germans, you know, the same thing. They didn't see it coming. They didn't realize how dangerous Putin was. And in that, they really were shown up by the Americans and the British. And I think that's kind of a source of embarrassment. And it's something that they will take a very long time to live down.
Okay, Lara, thank you very much indeed for joining us from Paris. Lara Marlow is the Paris correspondent of the Irish Times. Her stuff on this war and everything else has been magnificent, and we're grateful to her for joining us on Stand. Thanks to Lara. Thanks to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.